Those who make the worst use of their time are the first to complain about how short it is. But as Seneca said, it's not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste a lot of it. And this month, we have been talking a lot about living with more purpose and depth, finding ways to be more mindful to the opportunities around us. After all, each week that goes by is a week that we don't get back. Jodie Wellman is my guest today, and she started the 4,000 Weeks Project as a reminder to us to take life more seriously and to kick us out of autopilot. From her research on personal fulfillment, she found that more people are spectators in their lives and fall into the living dead category than those who are astonishingly alive. She is absolutely bursting with positive ideas from existential psychology to help us diagnose the dead zones in our lives and live with more vibrancy. So, hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Webster Harris. As always, diving into the psychology of self-improvement. And today, it's an absolute banger of an interview, and I very much hope you enjoy it. The Cozy Earth Mother's Day Sale is here. Their incredible bedding and loungewear is mind-blowingly satisfying to touch, and it is sourced from bamboo, and it's good for the planet, free from toxins, it gets softer with every single wash, and it's naturally temperature regulating. My mum approves, and yours will too. Listeners get 35% off any order at cozyearth.com using code GROWTH.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the show. Firstly, I would like to understand how you personally define a growth mindset.
Ooh, juicy. I'm going to see if Carol Dweck would approve. I am really interested in the outlook part of growth mindset, overcoming that idea and the feeling that life's a test and that we want to avoid looking foolish. And so we want to arrange our lives in this perfectly safe, contained scenario where we can just stay super fixed and comfortable and cozy. And I got to tell you, I really like a fleece-lined life. I like the coziness, but the growth mindset is bursting through the fleece-lined comfort in search for maybe uncertainty, but so much more. That's the way I look at growth mindset.
I like that as a definition. Have not heard that before. I really enjoy asking this question because everyone has a sort of quite different flavor. I also find that often when I then go into the rest of the interview, people somehow have something that really harks back to the way they define growth mindset, which is why it's interesting to start with. But I would like to ask you about the three questions that you outlined in your TEDx of like what you would ask yourself to actually sort out your life and start living properly.
Wow. Well, thanks for watching.
If you remember those three questions. I mean, when people ask me about my TEDx, I'm like, oh, what did I actually say in that thing?
Right. I banished it from my mind the minute I was done. Yeah. I think I could hit some of the high notes. One of the questions is this idea about identifying what possible regrets we might be careening towards if we got to a deathbed. So I'm super interested in this life where we're able to prevent most of the regrets that we have, right? So many people think, oh, regrets are all about wishing we didn't do stupid things. And yeah, that would be lovely if we didn't do stupid things, but we're going to keep doing them and we're going to find a way to rationalize them. It's about the feeling about getting to the end and thinking, here I am looking back on this life and I have a bunch of coulda, shoulda, wouldas, these things that I really wished I'd taken action on because my life could have been more invigorating or more meaningful or more something. And so I love the idea about identifying what those things are in service of saying, well, good news, you're not on your deathbed, likely. And so what do you want to do to prevent that regret? And I call them pregrets. I know it's super corny. Like, what do you want to do to prevent that pregret? It's not your last night. So how do you want to shape this life in such a way that you get to avoid the regret? I'm super interested in the regret avoidance situation.
Me too. I've picked up on talking to older people when I was a teenager of the things they said they'd wish they'd done and being like, I really don't want to be this old person in a job doing the same thing. It's telling some other young person what they should go and do with their life. I want to be the person that's done the stuff with their life.
Well, and that seems to shape your life. Like, you do all these really cool things. And I don't know if for you, it's because you have a talk track about avoid regret, or if you're just driven to explore.
It's definitely being very curious and a bit of regret avoidance around an awareness that you can't do things forever, as in you are going to get old. You're not really going to want to live in hostels or sort of hitchhike across Kazakhstan when you're old. So you should do that like earlier kind of thing. When you're coaching with someone, how do you coach them to have less regrets?
Well, most of the stuff I do now is in groups. And I love this because, so let's just say we're doing this, it's a workshop or it's a keynote and there's a bunch of people. The thing about regret avoidance that I find is that initially, if you ask somebody, and we'll do this right now, like I'll ask you or anybody listening in, like, what would be something if here you are horizontal on your deathbed? The good news is you are heavily medicated, so you're not in any pain and you're pretty peaceful and you're looking back on your life. And what are things that stand out that you wished you'd done? Most of us do draw a bit of a blank. Some of us have an idea like, darn it all, I had that one goal. For many people, it's I want to write the book, or I wanted to go back to school and study, or something specific. But for many people, we're kind of like deer in headlights. And where I do find it amazing working in groups is like one person might volunteer something, right? Like, oh, I wished I'd learned to speak Spanish. And then that helps someone else go, oh, right, that reminds me. I wish that I went to Spain. I always wanted to go to see the whatever in Barcelona. So for many people, like I encourage a list that is nothing is too small, nothing is too big, because this isn't meant to be seen by anybody necessarily. It's that get it out of your head and add to it as you go around your days about things that it essentially becomes a bucket list in reverse, right? It's like cool things I would really like to do before I do, in fact, kick the bucket. And for many of us, some things are large, some things are really small. Like it was at a workshop last week where someone said, you know, I've never tried a rutabaga. And I just feel like I need to try rutabaga before I die. And of course, the joke was like, tonight, you and your whole team are going to go out and try and find a rutabaga.
That was something I also really loved about adventure, by the way, was just like finding new foods and fruit. I just have a thing with fruit. But if there's so many fruits you've never heard of until you go somewhere else and you're like, what? I've lived my whole life without this thing. Oh,
right.
That's so good.
I could see a book in the making for forbidden fruits that you just didn't even know were out there. I love that. Living a fruitful life. Don't get me started. But yeah, it's so to identify a pre-gret and then action on it. So it's noticing what those things are. You don't have to rank them or rate them, but I do think that some of them are worth highlighting or starring and then saying, because you are not on the cusp of death, good news, which one do you want to start to take action on first? And like everything, this is the real difference between, they talk about the road to hell is paved with good intentions. My belief is that the road to the grave is paved with brimmingly full bucket lists that we just thought would be cool, but we just didn't do anything about it. And the difference is, you full well know, between living a life that feels like it was lively and or, it doesn't have to be lively. And by the way, we can talk about how I'm not trying to say your life needs to look a certain way. There's no one size fits all. But living a life that you felt like you did it, you checked the boxes that felt important to you, the difference between having a really neat idea and an intention and making it happen, there's a step, but it's super subtle and easy. It's like, did you put it in your calendar? Or what would the first step be? Obviously, the rutabaga, go to the store and buy one and go online and figure out what to do with it. But if it's about, I really would love to go and do an archaeological dig in a country that's just so foreign to me, what would the first step be? And when do you want to take that first step? And when do you want to be accountable to do that? And for most people, you get the ball rolling and next thing you're out in the dig.
Yes, definitely just prioritizing it and having an identification of like just the day when it happens. It's just like surprising that you kind of go through a week and no one's told you what to do. And you're like, oh, I didn't do anything. I just was waiting for like this hour to appear where I would suddenly be ready to do the thing. But it just never happens. And you're like, well, yeah, you just schedule it.
I love your point because you've just highlighted so clearly how our lives can become super automated. And that's literally the autopilot that we fall into, right? Because sometimes we need to zone out and just get into a routine because otherwise we've got a lot going on. It's hard to function. But for many of us, we need to throw a wrench in that. So for some of us, it does just mean, oh, hey, wait, I keep saying to a friend of mine, let's go out for lunch or go out for a drink. And we keep saying it, but well, we actually have to schedule it. Okay, then all of a sudden, the thing you wanted to do happens because you took the initiative, but also It breaks up the monotony of a week when otherwise it would just be an indiscernible mash of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They're all the same. I think this is controversial for a lot of people who love habits, but habits are the freaking worst for those of us that want to live astonishingly alive lives, because according to a lot of philosophers, they kind of dull the edges of life. They do turn us into what I call like really amazingly functioning zombies, where we're just going through the motions. And I don't know about you, but the idea of a life where I get to the end and I feel like I just went through the motions, because then life takes you along for the ride. And sometimes it's cool, but usually then we're left feeling like, oh, I didn't really get to have a vote for what I wanted to do in my life. And so therefore, I'm very suspicious of habits that I want the rest of us to also be.
I really love having a routine, but I love changing where I am for a while and just creating a new routine wherever I am for like a few months. Because of you kind of need some routine if you want to be creative and get stuff done. It's sort of essential, but equally, you need to have some adventure and differences and spark interest and creativity through abundance of other stuff that you weren't expecting. But definitely, we've been talking about priorities. I was wondering in terms of when someone's trying to go through their regret list, if you just start with prioritizing the easy things to do, help them with like the low-hanging fruit, and then make them choose like one big thing a year. Because like Derek Sivers has a really nice saying that maybe he didn't even start around really thirsty and hungry donkey, where he's got like hay on the one side and then water on the other, and he can't make a choice and just keeps on looking at one side to the other and then eventually just collapses and dies because he didn't suck it up and go drink some water for 10 minutes and then go over to the hay. Most people want to do these big things with their lives, but they don't accept that they could do the big thing for 8 years and then go to do the next big thing for 8 years. And they're like, I want to do all at once, but I can't. And so then just do nothing.
Yeah, what a fabulously practical question. I love it. I'll expand it for a second, if I can, beyond even this idea of about the pregrets, those regrets in the making. Because sometimes they can be maybe a bit grandiose or not. But I like to widen it and say, okay, let's look at our lives in two different dimensions. And you would recognize it from the TEDx talk, that it's not just that we want to live longer, it's that we want to live wider and deeper. So the widening dimension has to do with vitality, and that's adding in more pleasure, more fun, more of what's known as sort of the hedonic aspect of well-being. It's great. It's fun. It's kind of like neat things. It's going and trying crickets to eat, or it's going and having a really fun time at a concert, or it's taking up a new hobby that just makes us feel alive. All great stuff. That's one dimension, living wider, right? And then living deeper has to do with adding more meaning and purpose into life, a little bit more substantial, if you will. And it could be or involve something with spirituality. It could have to do with connection to other people, more of the character building virtues. And so some of us will, I recommend actually a starting point is to say, okay, look at your life along these two dimensions. And of course, it creates a framework, but where do you feel right now like things are going really well? Good, do more of it. But more importantly, I like to call it diagnosing the dead zones. Where are some of those areas flat? Where are they flatlined in your life? And you feel like, man, there is no pulse. Like most people are feeling like they have enough meaning, but they are bored. And they feel like they need a little more fun in their lives. Maybe they fell off the wagon during COVID and they just haven't really gotten back into the swing of things with getting out there and having fun or socializing or whatever is important to them. And so they need to identify, yes, specifically, it's that part of my life that I would really like to give CPR to. And how do I do that? And so for them, it might relate to the regret list, but it might not. And I think that the faster path, so back to your point, do you do a bunch of little things that then add up to something big or what? Most often, and I noticed this from as a practitioner, for most people, if they're feeling like they don't know where to start, a bunch of small little things build confidence and they build momentum. If someone has said, I don't have enough vitality in my life, like I'm bored, I want more fun, I want to do more things, want to try more things, participate in my life more, then that might just look like, well, what's one small thing you can do in the next couple of days? That might even be going online and looking up, researching where you might want to take a sketching class, for example. That might give somebody the feeling, and then maybe they register for the class that's going to start in a month. And that gives them a little bit of a boost, like, yeah, I've got a plan. Like, I'm going to do something fun on the horizon. And then you feel better about yourself and you're more inclined to say yes if someone asks you out for happy hour, because you're already now in your mind, you're associating yourself with somebody who lives a little rather than not a lot at all. And so I do think that identifying the small things you want to do, whether it's widening or deepening or both, and starting small is one of the most practical ways to live a life worth living.
I really like the terminology around that. It's definitely very accurate. Being proactive is super important on versus reacting and letting your life live for you, which he's alluded to. And we've mentioned like habits can be really bad, but if you have the habit of spontaneity, like I had a guest who was like a relationship expert who said that date night is super important, like once a week, to stop your relationship feeling like a dead zone. But every single week you should do something completely different, like never go to the same restaurant, never do the same thing. And like maybe once a month, one person like schedules it as a surprise and doesn't tell the person what they're even doing. And just, it's not that hard to put an extra 10 minutes into thinking about what to do and make it like fascinating and constantly build new experiences together. And just having the habit for spontaneity amongst the habits that like keep your life going is just sort of essential. Prioritizing the way you spend your time is just like a small little thing that makes such a big difference. Because you've spoken about, in general, waking people up to kind of living their lives. And we do have so many reasons to be way more grateful and way more happy compared to anyone else in human history in terms of all the things we have. And yet we are like fundamentally more anxious and more depressed and more worried. Like at least one reason I feel is just the amount of attention grabbing that makes it hard to actually prioritize what you should be doing with your time, because of it's so easy to go straight to your phone and go onto Instagram or whatever and lose that half an hour that whenever your brain is a bit bored and doesn't know what to do, it doesn't think to try and do something really big and difficult or interesting. It goes, oh, I can just fill this like weird bored time that I haven't worked out what to do with my brain with. And I don't know if you've looked into that area that much with people or helped them with those kind of addictions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. When what you're talking about is on the small scale, minute to minute thing that we choose to do because it's mindless. And because to be honest, we don't have a better option. We don't have a plan in place, a conscious plan to say, how can I enjoy my life today? And again, not only is it the autopilot we've let ourselves slip into, but in the absence of an actual agenda, like today at lunch, I'm going to make it a little bit special. I'm going to not check my phone. I'm going to go sit outside. I'm going to have a sandwich and I'm going to sit outside and look at the trees and the clouds and the birds and take a deep breath and maybe shut my eyes for a minute. And maybe I will listen to music, but having an experience in your life that's just, it's simple and it's free. In most cases, I mean, the sandwich might cost you a buck, but you were going to eat anyway. So being very conscious about planning a life that might bring you a little bit more joy rather than going through the motions that don't give us much of a return. And I think your example, what you've said about these things that we do that are the path of least resistance, that feel sometimes there's an addiction, like there's that dopamine squirt that does come when we check our phone. And so we're getting little tiny bits of satisfaction in life that are not substantive, right? It's a very hollow feeling of elation that is very fleeting. But that is actually a very small and fabulous example of what goes on in a bigger scale in our lives in general, which is the thing that I am most rabid about, which is we are doing that on the grand scale of life, right? We are letting the months and the years go by doing stuff that seems to be valuable and productive. Okay, I'm doing the thing that lets me pay my rent or my mortgage. I still have this group of friends, or I'm still in this relationship. But when you look at it in the bigger grand scheme of things, are you doing the things that really light you up? Are you going along with it? Are you kind of letting life carry you down the lazy river, like this current, versus stopping and saying, is my life happening to me? And this is the whole point of what I love to talk about, is that it's only when we stop and realize that life is finite that we can really appreciate the limited time we have. And we're living like we're going to live forever. That's exactly, I think, our issue, is we're living now as though I'm going to do that thing later. I'm going to go to Prague later. I'm going to take that course. I'll do that when I retire, or all the things that we are delaying. We're pushing it away for a future that we may never see. Because not only might we die, that would suck, but it's possible. But we might get to retirement and we actually don't have the energy, or our fibromyalgia flares up and we can't do the things we want to do, or life changes. And I'm not even that worried about the deferral because later we might not be able to. I am so defensive about the life we're living now. Like, all we have is now. And so why not make the choice to say, I want to participate and do the things now because my life is so worthwhile that I want to enjoy it today, not just defer it till tomorrow. What about today? So yeah, the grander scheme of life is that we're just online and letting all of a sudden 20, 30, 40 minutes pass us by. And that's the same thing we do day to day. So let's just get more deliberate, more conscious. How do you want to fill the time so you feel like when you get to the end, I killed it. I showed up and it was worth it.
Which is kind of the goal. And well, in some ways, it's very much the point of this podcast and just examining how to match your own human potential. Because I feel like so many people never even get close to what their potential is. In most cases, being a good boss means hiring talented people and then getting out of their way. LinkedIn Jobs is here to help small businesses hire quality candidates faster and for free. It isn't just a job board with over a billion users. No, you can find professionals that don't appear anywhere else. 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other hiring sites, and many of them might not even be actively searching for a role, yet could be open to a perfect opportunity. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours of posting their job. So hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. You can join 2.5 million other small businesses using LinkedIn to hire faster and for free by posting your job at linkedin.com/growth. That's linkedin.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. But I've always found myself unable to stop myself from seeing potential in other people and like reminding them of it and being like, bro, you're so good at this. Why are you doing more of this? This makes you so much happy. Do this. Like, I can't not be the annoying positive person that's like, come on, you've got this. And I kind of sense that vibe from you as well, which does make me think perhaps we could segue into like positive psychology, because I never really thought of positivity as like a strength that much. But then I've really recognized that it's actually very useful for people. I haven't gone deeper into the whole area of psychology and just actually matching your potential and doing things with your life. It's actually a lot easier if you are positive.
I think that there is confusion out there with positive psychology, the scientific study of what makes life worth living. Said differently, you know, the conditions that allow us to thrive, whether it's for individuals or teams or groups or communities. So, okay, let's look at the science of thriving, the science of it. It comes down to what you just said, like helping people use their strengths and doing more of the things that they're good at. And being positive is actually not even a requirement. Like, I think some people feel, because we have genetic tendencies of whether we're born optimistic or pessimistic, right? And fortunately, I'll say I was born a natural optimist, but I know people who are, okay, so Martin Seligman started positive psychology. He's a psychologist about 20 years ago or so, and 25 years ago. And he admits that he's anxious and struggles with being optimistic. And so you can still, as you full well know from so many of your guests, I mean, you can still reach your potential, blast past what you ever thought your potential was. You can still achieve and live a life that is meets the high notes of well-being without necessarily succumbing to and being this like a positive ray of sunshine. Like that's just, it's not required. It's lovely. It can be lovely. Like you said, it can also be annoying, but it's also, it's an extra sprinkling in the cookie batter. You could still reach your potential and experience what I call astonishingly alive lives in the absence of being perhaps an optimist. And that is, again, about being conscious about living wider and deeper.
I think it's actually quite interesting the way you described that. It's given me an idea of around like, certainly for things like ADHD and just a lot of things in life, the people with who are extroverts get noticed and the people who aren't don't, as in like, no one guessed that I had ADHD until like I'd spent the last sort of 12 years running around the planet, doing stupid stuff, running 5 different businesses at once and ultramarathons. Even though like, if you spoke to me, I'm pretty quiet and respectful. Like no one thought I had ADHD at school at all. Like I turned up, I did my classes, wasn't naughty at all. And I think it's the same with positivity. Like I would say I'm a positive person, but I'm not the person that's sort of like cheerleading, like go, go, go. I'm sort of, by the way, you're actually really good at this. Or if I got rejected from an interview, I'd be like, oh, well, there are more jobs out there. I wouldn't have it as a problem in my life. Or if like someone was a dick to me on a train, I'd be like, wow, that person's weird. As opposed to being like, all people are dicks, I hate life. Or if someone's nice to me on a train, I'm like, wow, all people are really nice. If it's a positive thing, I kind of generalize it. I'm like, yeah, everything's great. If it's a negative thing, it would be specific in like a sad moment, but not a problem.
whereas you're more expecting everything to be negative if you see one negative thing.
Yeah, I love this stuff because when it comes to optimism, it can be a trait and state. So there can be your explanatory style is one definition of it, which is exactly how you just said. Like when something bad happens to you, you don't internalize it, make it personal, make it seem like it's like this pervasive, permanent thing in your life. You're like, yeah, no, this is a thing that happened and I'm going to move on. Nor is it something that defines you. The part you started to talk about, I think, is fascinating because it doesn't, the way we project our outlook on the world or our hopes or whatnot with introversion and extroversion is irrelevant because there may be a classic profile of someone being positive who is extroverted. But I think that this comes back to where I love to temper a lot of the research I do and what I recommend. For example, my encouragement for us to live astonishingly alive lives. I chose the word astonishing, and that sounds like it's a pretty freaking big thing, right? And I think people think, well, wait a minute, I am more of an introvert. I like the quieter life. I don't want to do something that's showy. And my goodness, I say, it does not need to be showy. It does not need to look good on Instagram. It does not need to be for anyone. Your version of a life that is wide with vitality is like your version of fun can be very different than my version of fun. Same thing about your version of a deep life with meaning. And so it is very much relative to what lights you up. So your version of a really great weekend could just be super quiet and lovely and restorative and reading and cozy and oh my God, I want that. And someone else's might be like, that's so boring. I need to be swinging from a rope somewhere. And that's fine. You do you and you do you. But as long as you're doing you, I think that's the point. As long as you're doing the thing that you know lights you up, then we're good. But it doesn't need to be an outward projection for other people. In fact, oh, that would just be exhausting.
Yeah. It's definitely the highlights the age old wisdom of like, it's not about the answers, it's about the questions of what are the questions you need to ask yourself, not just looking for answers from someone, which is cool. How did you come up with the astonishingly alive model out of interest?
Oh, it was in grad school. So it was while I was doing my thesis and I was looking at the interplay of my connection to living the good life. And in the well-being science, there are two dimensions of well-being, hedonic, which I alluded to, which is the vitality spectrum. And then there's eudaimonic, which is more of that, the deeper section. And so I believe that though that interplay to me then became really clear that most of the clients I've worked with over the years and just myself being a human, it's like there are times where we might index towards wanting more substance and something that feels meaningful, like a connection or helping someone, volunteering, doing something that feels good, to do good, I should say. If it does feel good to do good, there's a return there. There are times where you're like, I just want to have fun. You know, I've been working really hard and I now really feel like, can I get out there? And so that interplay to me was what was fascinating around the two different dimensions. And then it came together to make a really convenient model, especially for my research around this notion of where we find ourselves. And unfortunately, my research is kind of depressing, but it shows opportunity because there are more people out there who identify in the dead zone, which is when we're anywhere negative on vitality and anywhere negative on meaning, more people are there than they are in that astonishingly alive zone, which is positive on vitality and positive on meaning. So admittedly, most people find themselves in the camp of meaningfully bored or vitally empty or in the mid zone, but more people are dead than alive is essentially the way that I'm going to just baseline that.
Which is sad because it definitely doesn't need to be that way, you'd think. And it's interesting that as in 60% of people have a fixed mindset, although obviously 95% of people think they have a growth mindset. I was just wondering how much of a crossover there is than if you've ever done a further test on like whether they have a growth mindset or not. So that'd be interesting.
Oh, that's such a great question. I think because such a hallmark of a fixed mindset is a fear of uncertainty. And I think that there's a fear that if I was to overlay that onto this like astonishingly alive idea, I think, well, I mean, doesn't it all come back to fear, right? Like, I think there is a fear of engaging in life sometimes. This is sort of the next frontier of the research I do around what's really going on behind the scenes when we defer our plans? Okay, so let's just say we make this decision. Oh, wow, I'd love to travel to Japan. Yeah, I'm going to do it someday. Okay, so someday, well, that's basically like good luck with your life. Like you're going to die before you go to Japan. I'm sorry, I'm just being really snarky. But then it's like, oh, no, I'm going to do it later. I'm going to keep like kicking it down the curb. Keep going, keep delaying it. Well, I'm suspicious because I think, yeah, you know, we are busy, but busy is also a super easy, convenient excuse. And I recognize also it takes a little bit of cash to go to Japan or to do this, any dream that we have, right? Like starting a business or going and dating again and like putting yourself out there on a dating app or like whatever the thing is that could represent real fabulous life, but also that's a little bit scary. So I think that there's way more to it than just I'm busy, I'll do it later. There's a hurdle. It's a fixed mindset, in my opinion, that relates to if I get out there and like start dating again, or if I do try and go and apply for that job that would be so fabulous, but it could also get rejected. And will I need to go home and lick my wounds? Yeah, I think we're choosing quite, it's not quite conscious, but it's still, it's just below the surface. I think we're not engaging in life because it's too scary to do.
100%. And I think it's part of lack of awareness of your own ego that's self-protecting you. And I do talk about sometimes the concept of what you want to do versus what you want to have done. And there's a lot of things that you want to have done, but you want to skip like the hard part or the failure to get there, or like you want to find the perfect partner. But actually, that might involve like 100 dates if you're actually going to look at statistics of it, and that you don't want to go through like 99 dates that are crap before you find the actual person. And you just want to have like 2 different dates to be like, right, done. That took a few weeks. Everything's now fine. And yeah, there's a lack of commitment to actually doing the difficult part, which is sad, but often even not as difficult as in suddenly like I'll put off my accounts for like weeks on end. I'm like, oh, this terrible, scary thing for me to do. And it'll take me like 2 hours. And I was wasted like days of my life avoiding it. And you're like, the hard thing often isn't even that hard, which is even more surprising. A lot of it is just starting.
Well said. Which to me, again, if we make this macro, because it is like that little procrastination of something that feels annoying, or maybe it's a bit scary, or whatever the reasons we are because why we procrastinate. It's just we can scale it up. We're afraid to embark on life. Ben Franklin had that great quote, many people die at 25 and aren't buried until they're 75. You can interpret that a bunch of ways, right? So that's definitely about our choice to participate and engage and choose the things that might light us up and let us live and feel like we nailed it by the time we get to the end. But again, I think we're dying at 25 because it is a little bit about overcoming that fear. It's so much easier and safe. It's safer to have a fixed mindset. And yet, I've always loved that expression. You must love this too. You know the difference between playing to win versus playing not to lose? And like, I've spent so many years of my life, I still do this, playing not to lose. I like safety. I am very comfortable in a safe environment. I don't want to necessarily put myself out there. And so I feel scared. So I will choose the play not to lose route until I really stop for a while. And then I have to bust myself and I say, oh, honey bunny, this isn't the way you want to live. And the thing that snaps me out of it, to be super honest, back to everything memento mori with me, is I have 1,841 Mondays left in my life. Like, I cannot be playing around, playing not to lose. Come on, snap to it. And then I slap myself in the face and I get out there.
Yeah, I do really like that concept, which we haven't spoken about that much, is I think any tools that help you nudge you to remind you of those things is like so essential. And as you're talking there, something I've never maybe thought of in this way, but loads of people get advice to sort of meditate or journal, or like actually just going running or just having a few hours exercise to myself is just one of like the best life hacks for just reflecting and like those nudges that I need to stuff that I'm like putting off for a few days. So I'm like, knowing that this would be like a harder decision that actually would be so much more useful for my life compared to avoiding the difficult thing. Because I find something perhaps worth going into is like, there's actually fears that we haven't even recognized as fears. Like, for example, I had a friend that was doing stand-up comedy. It didn't even enter my brain that I should be scared of doing stand-up comedy because it was so far from what I could even consider my potential. It was like not even vaguely near my comfort zone. It was just like, I would die before doing stand-up comedy. So it's more of just a spectator, be like, oh, wow, that's nice. You do stand-up comedy. And then like I started running the podcast. I ended up doing a TEDx But because I was coming up to the TEDx, I ended up doing Toastmasters. I did the comedy track, and I ended up doing stand-up comedy as well. As like, okay, I'm just going to throw everything at this. And it was so much fun, and it was scary. But like from a few years before, when it like didn't even enter my brain to even imagine that I could do it. And I was so proud of myself for like actually realizing that there was this thing that I could even do, which I probably wouldn't have noticed if I didn't have a friend in like a mentor club that I was in that was doing it. And I just wonder how many fears people have in their life that they're just a spectator on. Because like, I have an auntie that like will forever tell me about all these things that she could never do herself. And I'm like, you could do any of these things, but she's just so safe. She just loves putting everything at a massive arm's distance. Probably loads of people that are just spectators on things that they haven't even realized is even a fear.
Oh, I think you're right. And I think there needs to be like a summer camp for adults to go to, which is like F fear. And doing with all sorts of experiential things where like a lot of it's physical. Like I have major fears around athletics because I grew up self-conscious about not being athletic. And then of course, well, if you never try out for volleyball, you're never going to play volleyball. And then you're always going to be afraid of volleyball, right? But there needs to be sort of an experiential, like, see, you can experience it. And maybe if I went on a volleyball court and I didn't break my face and other people's bodies, it'd be like, this is fun. And again, not caring what people think about you, at least not as much. I love your point. There's a whole freaking world out there of stuff. And it's funny to me. I always consider, what is it about fate? Is it fate? Is it just, what is it like? People talk about how different people come into their lives, whether it's a partner or a friend or someone. And is there any coincidence? I look at it the same way with opportunities in life and hobbies and interests and things that might create a spark of passion. Is it a fluke that, you know, someone exposes you to stand-up comedy and you'd be like, I never knew. I had no idea this could be something really cool for me. Or rock climbing. So I talked to someone this morning who's getting into glass blowing. Like, how is it that these little tiny little things get into our lives? And it mind blows me because there's just so much out there that I want us to do the sampler platter. We can't possibly give it all a go, but almost like a little elective sort of thing like we did in school where you just get to pick and plod and try it out. And if you don't like it, leave it. That's fine. But try it. Give it a go and see if it sparks you. And if it doesn't, I'm a big fan of abandoning something swiftly. If it's not doing it for you. Now, by the way, I'd love your opinion on this because as a growth mindset guy, I'm not suggesting like when it starts to get a little bit hard and it feels a little, you're nervous because maybe you are at risk of looking like a freaking idiot. I'm talking about like when I'm starting a book and I'm at page 7 and I'm not feeling it, silence, see you later. I do not want to waste my life trying to like a book. But what's your thought on applying yourself to growth? What do you think?
One of those really hard questions that it really does depend, because you shouldn't give up just because something is hard, of course. Like there's plenty of things in life and hard. If anything, that's usually a sign to put more effort in because it's the hard things that are worth doing. Like nothing worth doing is easy, especially when you make a New Year's resolution and you're like, oh, this is a hard thing I've never done. I really want to do this hard thing. And then like 2 weeks into it, it starts getting hard. Like that's a sign you're actually doing the hard thing. So carry on because you're doing the hard thing. Finally, like don't give up. Because you wanted to do the hard thing. So yes, do hard things. When it's hard, that's a good sign. Equally, why is it hard? If it's hard because actually it doesn't resonate with you at all, and there's like 20 book ideas that you have, it could be right to move on to the next one. No book idea is going to be that easy to write, I doubt. I don't know if you heard of Yanis Varoufakis. He wrote a really good book in like 8 days. But I think it's the same as like musicians. Like some of the best songs were written in like half an hour. But there were people that spent like 10 years learning to write songs and had written like hundreds of songs before they ever wrote a song like that. So I wouldn't give up on a book 7 days into it just because if you've got like, okay, lots of other ideas. But if you've started it and realized that actually it only needs to be a blog post or something, like then yes, give up on it. Maybe I'm going a bit too far into the book's explanation.
No, I love it. It sounds like an honest interrogation of yourself and saying, really, what's behind this? I started taking bridge lessons with a friend to learn how to play bridge. I have no interest in bridge, but she was like, do you want to do it? And I said, yes, it sounds just ridiculous enough to do and have fun. I go, I hated it. Like I was in over my head. And I thought, in addition to not being able to make the next two classes because of legitimate issues with my schedule, it was a very clear, would I feel good about myself if I stuck to it? Maybe at the end, I'd feel like, wow, I really learned a hard thing. But do I need to torture myself in the meantime? No. So my interrogation was, am I giving up because I'm just afraid of, admittedly, I mean, I would have looked like an idiot, but I could have handled it. But it was about, no, this will not bring me joy. taking this for 12 weeks would actually decrease my quality of life. And so that was a good litmus test, interrogating what's behind my no.
And like I was saying with the want to do versus want to have done, it can sometimes take some time to realize that you don't want to have done 12 weeks worth of bridge. Like when you first signed up, you might have had the intention of wanting to do it, but like you quickly realized that it wasn't for you. Like I've always been in choirs when I've been in different cities. I turned up to this choir and I got to Amsterdam and it was just so boring. So I quit after 2 weeks and wasn't in a choir in Amsterdam. It's okay if something's boring or like isn't for you. You have to at least try. But I totally agree with just doing lots of different things with your life though. Maybe it's also because I'm curious, but I've done way more 3-month boot camps of cool stuff that I'm probably never actually going to do long term. And like I have a sailing captain sea master's license I've never used. Like I'm a qualified Himalayan mountain guide now. And I might go back and use it. That would be nice. But if I don't, it doesn't matter.
Well, I think back from what we're aligning back to, again, your value of adventure and curiosity, both of those values. And I think right now about how there are some people that, like I think about my lovely dear dad, he's 87 years old and nor would he be sailing or mountaineering, but he has a very sort of sweet and simple way of living where, and even when he was more able-bodied, he was not interested in getting up and out and doing stuff. And so for him, his joy is watching baseball on TV. I look at that and I go, okay, right. I want to remember that participating in life, back to it being relative for different people, I just want us to pay attention to that little signal inside. I do believe that there's that niggling sense that we get when we know, I think there might be more. And again, your version of more is up for absolute interpretation for you, but that sense that could I be getting out more or could I be, like for me, it's usually about being social. I'm an introvert and I'd rather be home. I'm a homebody. And so I'd rather be home, but I also know that is not a recipe for like a full, well-rounded life. And I always end up liking it when I come home from being out. Like I have a lunch out today with a friend. And would it be easier for me to stay curled up with my cat? Yes. And I know going out will be lovely and I'll come home and I'll feel like, oh, I did a thing and that's better for me to do in the right dose. And so that's the question is when you get that niggling about the desire, I think that like life just wants to be lived. It's like a green shoot in spring coming out of the soil, like just let me live. I don't care if I'm in a parking lot, the life says, like, let me just prosper and somehow flourish and let me just somehow not get run over by a car today. And I think that's in us too. If we pay attention to those signals, for you, your signals are probably a little more cool sounding on the outside with adventure and with doing neat things than for someone else. I mean, again, whatever it is for you, that whatever that whisper is that might actually end up being a little bit of a dull roar, we just have to listen to it and honor it and not punt it until freaking retirement.
100%. Even for me, it's so easy to slip into not doing exciting things. Even just the going out as in, like, yeah, last week, both me and my girlfriend didn't really want to go out to photo club. That's just, I think my mum did whilst we were like visiting her. Because I don't know, we're just tired, can be asked. But then we did, and it was so much fun. And it's just so hard to make you do these little things sometimes. But I definitely have tried to build a muscle of like, when life gives you two options, what is the one that's going to give you like a memory or like a story? It's so worth it in the long run. When you think about if your life was a book that you're writing every day to someone else to read, are you going to be this super boring person? Or are you actually going to have done some stuff like worth them actually reading the book about? And like, you're always going to want to choose the one that's like, okay, yeah, I did hop on that random wagon full of people going somewhere weird into the desert or whatever. I just feel like memories are super important and like that's kind of all you have when you die and on your concept of regret. And so I've always thought that. But then one thing, like I worked on oil rigs for a bit, like redesigning systems, which was really interesting. But it's basically like a prison where you just have the same day every day in, day out. Like, and just meeting all the people that worked on them was crazy because they just for like slightly bigger wage, just lost like half their life because if they just did the exact same jobs in like this prison for money. And I'm like, oh my God, that's awful. As far as the experiential side of it, it's just like the same day after day. And I'm like, oh my God, it really forced the importance of what a memory is in your head and just realizing how days blur into one. Because it's easier to not notice it quite so much when you're at home, you have like a bit more stimulation. Like, yeah, you do go see some people on the weekend maybe, and you do go into the office. Like there's some difference, but actually like after 3 months, it's still mostly forgotten. It's mostly blurred. You can't remember the thing you watched on TV or like the podcast you listened to yesterday. Whereas, yeah, if you go to a completely different place for dinner, you do speak to random people on the train or whatever and force yourself to like do weird stuff or like couch surfing, like have some people go stay at your house who you've never met, things like that. Like it'll add weird stuff, and weird is great.
Right. This is back to that, like I call like shaking up the snow globe of life. Like when you've got the back to the routine, there's something that is really magical about, even for those people who are not as adventurous, but it's that, okay, if you normally take the same route home every day, if you're on the same route, what about shaking it up and like going a different route? And all of a sudden you are exposed to new storefronts or new people or new sidewalks. And it's fascinating in psychology. There's this self-determination theory. It's a theory of motivation. What kind of what causes us to plug into life? And one of the aspects, or the researchers were very clear, novelty is so crucial to our experience of feeling self-determined and feeling engaged and motivated in life, that because we need the newness. Have you heard like the difference between neophiliacs and neophobics? You are clearly a neophiliac. You want new, cool, interesting things. And it sounds like maybe the weirder, the better, because it will make a memory. Oh my gosh, your memories are going to be so cool. And some people are like, oh, no. Like my dad, for example, will be like, if it's not cheddar, he doesn't want to try any other cheese on the planet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want what I like. So within reason, again, shake up the routine, shake up that snow globe, try a different workout. Back to your point about like date night. You can still have the ritual of a date night, but what are you going to do that's different? And even back to your point about spontaneity. And all these things are interesting to me because while they are not necessarily difficult to do, and while they don't necessarily require a lot of resources like money, it just takes a beat. It takes a minute to stop your busy life, especially so busy that, you know, you're on your phone and say, how do I want to make date night special Thursday? Or next week, what do I have in my calendar that I have to look forward to? What could be something that's interesting and a little bit different? Maybe I do something different on Saturday. Maybe I go to that museum I keep saying I'm going to go to, but I never do. You know what? You're dying. You have to go. Time is ticking. We don't have time to wait.
100%. And yeah, it's crazy how much potential there is in your brain to come up with ideas if you just sit in a room without any technology and just like a pen and paper. Of stuff that will come out of you if you just allow yourself to be bored and not let yourself jump into something else. It just like entertains your brain.
Such a good point. And you know what? I would never choose technology over a nice analog moment, but I would say that there can be benefit in doses, of course. Like I'm in a relatively new town. We moved here about 2 years ago in California, and I don't know much about what's going on. So I will look online about the little things. What to do in town over the next week? And I'll look. And I'll click on something and I'll be like, well, that's kind of randomly weird. There's a talk by some mountain climber. Like, let's go see him talk because it's fun or interesting. And normally, and so saying yes to something, I like the way you worded it. Sometimes life gives you a choice, like one of two options. I also think that there are these sort of passive moments that I could never look online and see what's going on in town. Or I could say, here's this thing. If it twinkles and it makes me go, ooh, that's interesting, just book it. Just do it rather than letting it pass you by. Those are seize the day or seize the week moments, I think, that are back to your low-hanging fruit.
It's definitely those moments where you're like, oh, I'll be able to think about it better tomorrow or something, and you just never get back to it. If like they just do it, it's like it's a really good thing. The other thing there was like, actually now we're talking about that, is the amount of times you don't realize there's the opportunity to do something different. As in like, it's kind of obvious to reflect on something when life does give you like an A-B situation of like one is much cooler. And like slowly you start to notice them. But then there's the regular weeks just passing by where you just don't notice how many moments there are to just have a jazzy breakfast or do something kind of funky that it's, you just wouldn't even realize.
You wouldn't. And this is back to us, how we're just wired to take our lives for granted. We take our time in our lives. And so there are people, I understand, parents might have a summer vacation with their kids and you just go through the motions. And then all of a sudden it is now the end of the summer and we took it for granted, and now it's all of a sudden the last weekend you got to cram in something fun. Versus what if we did stop, sit back for a second, I prefer to do it over a drink, but you drink whatever you prefer, and be like, what do I want to have? Like, I'm a fan of actually what I call them, these little bite-sized bucket lists, not the big life bucket list, that's good too, but I look at it like, if there's a discrete amount of time, say I'm doing a vacation, which is only like a week or two, I will make a list. And I do this with the husband where we're like, the list of all things, amazing summer. And believe me, these things are not always fancy, right? It could just be something like, we're going to go for a popsicle at the corner store and we're going to sit on the curb and eat a popsicle like you do when you're 7 years old, or bike to that park and do whatever. Like, they can be simple things. Often those are the things that we treasure more, that are just those sweet little moments in life, right? But planning for them, being conscious of it and building it in and making it happen, because otherwise summer's going to pass you by, and just like life. So you might as well just be a little more thoughtful about what you want to build in. I think that really is the moral of our story.
I feel like, you know, like the phrase, a fish doesn't know it's in water. So you just don't see like the culture of your life and how you live it. And suddenly whenever I'm in an airplane and like you take off, you just recognize that like humanity basically lives in like this kind of completely 2D film just on the Earth's crust. And you're like, there's so many like more dimensions that like I spend my whole life on the floor, not even noticing. But it's the same in time. Like, you're just going through time, doing your thing, not realizing like every single moment you could technically do something completely crazy. Like, within 5 minutes, I could be in jail if I really tried. Like, I obviously don't want to go to jail, but you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing stopping me from going absolutely bonkers. But I could do that in a very different way, like surprise my girlfriend with a crazy card that just tells her I love her, or like make a cake or anything weird, like, or different.
Oh, this is so cool. You're so right. Like, we are always on the precipice of something that we could design and do. Well, sometimes we just got to sit back and like, there's a lot going on. But you're right. We could take a minute. We're always on the cusp of moments that we could choose to either delight ourselves or again, we could miss it. Even if we just took the bait, like one more time a week doing that. That to me is the difference, I think, between a life where someone feels like, wow, I'm giving myself an A+ for showing up and actually like participating in my life, rather than that sense that we've squandered it. And we know what that feels like, and it sure doesn't feel great.
Okay, I have two final questions that I like asking people. One is, what is one of your earliest memories?
I was 4, maybe 3, early, and in the crib, and standing up and looking around my room at night and looking at how my mother had decorated and her coming in. So I very vividly remember lots of crib memories. Very conscious of the decor.
You have a very nice decor where you're at, I have noticed.
Oh.
I also was wondering, is that like a big poster of lots of different photographs arranged in a nice way, or is it like a tile thing of...
Okay. So one of my favorite artists is David Shrigley. And I went online and got little images of 685 of his little paintings, and I cut them out, printed them out, cut them out, and glued them on. So it's a collage of some of my favorite, it's not copywritten, so it's not for sale. It's just me doing it at home, but I love his stuff. And so when I stand there, and I at any given moment could look at one of the little paintings, and he does little sarcastic quips, and I just love it. So it brings me joy to look at.
Excellent. Nice. Glad I asked. The other question is, what is one of the kindest things someone has done for you?
I feel like it's very kind that I reached out to several people to do blurbs for my book coming out. Many people don't have a system set up and they didn't respond to any emails or any requests. And I get it. People are busy. But many people, regardless of whether they took the time or not, some people were very kind to get back to me. And it wasn't that I would say that the kindest people were the ones that gave the blurb, although I will give a special shout out to Adam Grant for being extra kind to make time in a short timeline to take a look at the book and give an endorsement.
He's really good at answering emails.
Yes, he's lovely. And that to me, he was the first example that kind of came to me before my parents.
Also, he is organized. Like, I feel like I'm kind, but I'm just not that organized. So I don't know.
Yeah, he's got like a system. Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like somebody that is super busy and still makes time for people to make them feel like they matter, that to me is kind.
Okay, that's nice. I love asking that question because people always talk about like you should have more kindness in your life and things because it's such a life hack for being happier and stuff. But then what are the ways to be kind? It's just like a really nice reminder of the different things that are just in front of you that you maybe haven't recognized, the opportunities. The same way I was talking about, there's lots of opportunities to do interesting things with your life that you don't recognize or even there. It's the same with kindness. So it's a nice one to ask. Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me here. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you. You're amazing. You're inspiring.
Oh, thank you very much. You too. Boy, oh boy, was Jodie a bundle of positive energy.
If you want to hear more from her, she has a book, You Only Die Once, coming out soon, and her website, 4000 Mondays, is full of good advice. I'll put links in the description to find her social media or other contact details. And then, if you know a lot of people in your life who are already the living dead, do please send them this episode to let them know how dead you think they are, because after all, that is how the podcast grows and how you subtly show people that you think they're useless. Any feedback from me, do please stick it in the comments or shoot me an email at growthmindsetpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're feeling very kind, a positive review on your app of choice does go a long way. Now, finally, if you happen to have your ears switched off all episode, you might be very surprised to hear that life is kind of short and you need to make the most of it in the present day and not wait to do those things you truly want to do. So get busy living and be kind to yourself, and whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.